From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Chad Beater.
And I'm Ed Richards.
And welcome to part four of Defrag Tools Windows Performance Toolkit.
Yep. Quattro.
So we've kind of covered what it is architecturally in number one.
Yeah.
And we covered the Windows Performance Analyzer, which is the UI to view tools and how to move things around. In part two, last week, part three was on the command line. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of covered everything globally. Now we're going to drill into scenarios. And so today we're going to drill into the CPUs.
Cool.
And so let's jump into it. We need a elevated command prompt because it's all privileged stuff. So there is a whole lot of, where are we going? There's a whole lot of kernel groups that kind of are designed to help you with this stuff, but I'm going to show you getting it to the absolute minimum, and then we'll slowly expand it out to the point where it's useful. Particularly, the thing I don't like about all these providers, which are most of the top ones to do a CPU, is they're including disk, and that can use up a bit of space.
Yeah.
And so we're going to exclude that bit from the system. So let's start from the absolute barest bones and I'll turn on what's called the profile collector, and we are going to get stacks at the same time, because quite frankly, profile will just give you the like the CPU graph. So like much like a performance monitor would give you a CPU graph, and that's about it. We'll also get stacks when this happens, and I'm not going to worry about buffer sizes right now, because I'll keep it nice and clean. And so let's get some load on this guy. Use Aaron Margosis's test tool. Well, this thing's got 8 CPUs. I'll hog, say, 6 CPUs. And now that's using 100% CPU power. And then under performance, you'll see that we're kind of running hot. That's enough. And then we will stop it. And we always have to remember to do minus D to merge it out appropriately. And open the file.
It's a good tool to warm your hands by in the winter.
Well, yeah, this thing nicely throws up your CPU fan, so.
Very efficient, too. Efficient way to heat your house.
So we don't get that many graphs, and actually if I open it with Expert View, this is one of the very few things that the new WPA is kind of deficient on. It won't tell you the graphs that you've got. This is the graphs we've got. We've got stack counts by type. Because we did the minus stack warp profile, we have stacks, so it's telling us how many there are of those. Computation is the overall amount of CPU for the box, so it's like everything conglomerated together. And then there's the sampling. And then it's visualized 3 different ways from the same data set, so by CPU, by process, by thread. And then generic events is the raw data that represents the ETL file. That's a lot of that comes from the minus D stuff. But if we look at it from WPA, roughly the same thing. Here's the stack graph, and here's the computation. When we expand out the provider one, which is this one, we get 3 graphs. Once again, here's the by CPU one, here's the by process one, here's the by thread one. So just by CPU, for example, is that completely empty? So this is, I think, an artifact of the way I recorded it, and I'll show you another way. Is this is a graph of the usage, but notice that we've got no process names, we've got no thread representation of it, and if I put the thread graph here, the thread one's equally as useless. And the reason is we did the command line wrong. Mm. Right? What's the keywords that we have to do every time to make things decent? We have to do always proc thread and proc and loader. So if we do this again, and we'll del that, let that run a bit. Oops. Hog some CPU. That's long enough. And then stop it. roughly the same thing, but this time all of those processors and who own that CPU power and all that stuff actually now has an association.
You want to close your other one first?
I think I did. This is the app thing, not the...
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So it looks roughly the same, right? Really can't tell much difference, but if I now grab, say, for example, the by thread one, we now have
much better
the names. So let's have a look at this guy. So we know that here's our spike. If we hover over it, it will find it and give us a nice little tooltip. There's another, there's six threads, there's actually six in this pile. And so what we can do is we know that this is the VetMem test. And there's an SVC host going quite hot for a short time too. We know it's this guy, so we can say filter to selection. So if you're just trying to profile one application that's going a bit hot, you know, reduce your data set, get it down to what you want. At this point, the graph's kind of irrelevant, so I'm going to squeeze it up out of the way. And this is where the slicing and dicing starts mattering, right? By choosing this dropdown, it's set the columns up appropriately. So if I choose this, you'll get the columns will change. It's like presets. Here's the pro, and then what CPU it was hot on. In this case, you just want to kind of keep it to the one we had. When you do it, you do clear the filter. Be aware of that. And so we asked for it to spin up six threads. There are seven, so one of those will be the main one, and six will be the hot guys. You can kind of guess by the numbers that this was the thread doing the main UI, and these six were the workers.
Yeah.
So we can say straight away that, you know, this thing was running six threads, they were all quite hot. If we expand this out a bit, you can see that, see how the little blue line here? See how it moves?
It synchronizes the highlight in the graph with what's highlighted in the table.
So it's actually currently sorted by how much CPU power got used. And so there must be a slight fractional difference, which is why we're kind of jumping around left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And so just for the sake of clarity, where am I going? In the numbers, what we can do is we can just sort by the timestamp instead. So here's the first one. And then as we go across, you'll see that the bar slightly moves across. So every single one of those points, we have the stack. So every millisecond, every CPU was interrupted. And for the period of whatever this is, we got 3,300 samples of that thread being the one running in the CPU. Because I have eight CPUs and I did six, the odds are that thread was in there perpetually. It wasn't scheduled out and thrashing. Mm-hmm. If I had maybe bumped it up to, say, 20 on eight CPUs, you would have seen it coming in and out, in and out, in and out.
Cycling between different threads.
Mm. Now, the thing that you mentioned last week, which is really important to understand, is it's a 1 millisecond sampling. If you run for less than 1 millisecond, you may be missed.
Right. Right?
So let's work out what code is hottest. So I tend to start with module, and then we'll go into stack next. So let's just ignore the thread for now, because we care about how hot it's running full stop, really not how hot it is per thread. Well, you can go that way if you want. So it all depends what your focus is. So if we do that, we can see that the vast amount of the time was in code associated with VetMem test. So this thing doesn't have DLLs or anything, so it's just actually in the XE itself. And then there's a very small amount of time in Win32K, which is Windows and stuff like that.
GDI.
And so if you expand this, you go, well, it's still not much help, right? You kind of know that the XE itself is where the memory went. If you've got things like Internet Explorer or File Explorer and all these things pegging in themselves, and you want to know why, what you're probably looking at is like an IE add-on or a shell extension to Explorer, and you'll see that module. So you might see the Quijibo shell extension, and that's the one that's hot. So you can go, okay, I'll disable that extension, and everything should be good. When we get to weight analysis, the same thing also is true in reverse. If it hangs and it's in that guy, then you know that add-on's the one that's probably to be removed, or at least you might pull out process monitor or something like that to work out what kind of operation it's doing, or other ECW providers, and track it down that way. So the next step, the layer of data, is to go to the stack level. We'll get rid of module. We'll get rid of module. And so this is where you get your question mark. So you need to load symbols. We talked about this before. It's in your environment variables. It's all set. And then just load.
Once again, refer back to episode 1 on how to set up your symbol
creating
path.
Creating your lightsaber.
That's right.
So the great thing about WPA versus XPerf is this is an asynchronous operation. So I can still play with the UI while this is happening.
Symbol load happens in the background. That was always a real frustration with the old XPerf viewer, was when you'd load symbols, you have to like go to lunch and come back, and eventually they'd come down.
I opened a trace yesterday, and it took 1.5 hours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, luckily it was WPA, so it was redrawing, so I could actually minimize the window. With XPerf, it just stays there frozen on screen, painting the whole thing in an annoying way.
Well, once they're cached locally in your symbol cache, then subsequently it'll be much faster if you open the same trace or a trace from the same machine, for example. But that first time pulling the symbols down can take a while.
Yeah, and I advocate putting in your SkyDrive. It's not that, because they're shrinking the PDBs down to these quite small files. They're only a couple of K. Mm-hmm. Just waste 1 megabyte or 5 megabytes of your SkyDrive and just keep it there. So even though this is loading in the background, I can play with it still. You do find it sits on this 99% every once in a while. I've never understood why, but it finally will click over to 100, but it's just what it does. So the trick is to use your, don't use the mouse here, use the keyboard, and get yourself in the bottom graph, and then you don't really see it, but there actually is a focus on per column, right? So you click on the column and then press right. And what it does, it will expand it out and out. And as long as the tree is in the same rough number area, keep following it. So in this case, we can see that it goes all the way down here, and actually we get to the sampling, right? But if we look at the other one, which is much smaller numbers, you'll see some. Do we have any? No, this is not going to show it, but. You'll see forking and say, this function's taking up 40% and this function's taking up 20%, and you need to start spraying out like a tree like you expect it to. You don't expect it to be a one function that's running super hot. But that's what really it comes down to. You just hold down the right-hand arrow and go to the bottom and then go, okay, this has got 19,000 samples. Proportionally, it's 58% of the box, and that function is running way too hot. So why do I have question marks on the end?
You don't have symbols for Aaron's tool.
I do not have symbols for Aaron's tool. That's exactly right. So this is what you'll get with third-party programs, right? When you're not using, Microsoft with its public symbol server will give you the symbols for Windows. It won't give it to you for Outlook or Exchange or SQL, SharePoint, whatever. This is the experience you'll get. It's not a bad thing, but it's kind of just, it just means that you don't have as much context as you'd like.
So you can see that VertMem test was doing a lot, but you don't necessarily know exactly what function it was in because you don't have those symbols.
And in a real-world scenario, it will go via things. It will go into something, then it will go into Win32K, then it might come out again, and then it might go into, DirectX or something. And so you can kind of get the idea that when you go via Microsoft things, which we will give you names for a lot of the base Windows stuff, mm-hmm. you kind of know what it's doing to the operating system, even if you don't know what the program itself is kind of doing. So this is great and all, but it has a limit. Do you guys guess what the problem is here? So we know that if processes are running hot, but does that mean that the box is okay?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, what data is missing on the graph?
Well, you don't know. You took disk out.
Yep.
So, a lot of times you'll see performance issues as a result of not necessarily the CPU being overburdened, but the disk or the memory or something like that.
And the way that you'll see that is actually looking down into the kernel more, right? And so what we're missing is the whole kernel side. All we've seen so far is applications pegging in the machine. If this thing goes into the kernel, you won't see it, right? And so what's missing, and you'll see this on the profile one, is particularly over here, where is it? This one here, all these ones. They all have interrupts and DPCs
yes.
as well.
Yes.
So a lot of the time, if you have, particularly if you have flaky hardware, all the CPU time will be spent in interrupts and DPCs. There won't be any time spent in the application. We talked about this a couple of times. The DPC watchdog timeout is all about that in Windows 8, right? And so if you're having that particular bug check, it's because DPCs and interrupts are doing something very bad. And what you can do is just run a trace, including DPCs and interrupts, and then what you'll get is, it doesn't have to get to the point where a bug checks the box, but you can go and look, how stable are my drivers, right? And so it's just a matter of adding those guys to the command line that we've got. So we've got profile. And there's one more that we want, which is called, plus drivers, plural. DPC is roughly going to give you exactly the same thing as the CPU graph for apps, but it gives you the CPU graph for DPCs. Interrupts going to do the same thing for interrupts, also known as interrupt service routines. And the driver's keyword is actually kind of not data, it's actually more analysis. What it's going to record for you is the time that you enter a function call in the kernel and the time that you leave a function, or sorry, a driver in the kernel. So if there's a particular driver that's running, it doesn't have to be running long from a CPU saturation point of view. It could just be running long because it's doing lots of waits and stuff. Antivirus could be a good example. It's saying, hey, well, I'm slamming the disk. It's not really using the CPU itself because it's asking someone else to get the disk I/O done for it. But the driver could be running really, really long. And so if you have horrific AV performance, you'll see this nice, long graph. So let's do the same thing again and add this one. And this is basically what you want as a command. This is the quintessential CPU analysis command, high CPU command. There's another command we'll do, which we'll do that next week, on weight analysis, which is the opposite. Instead of when the CPU goes up, we want when the CPU goes down, which is more like hang analysis or weight analysis. So let's do this again. I actually did this last night already, so I'm not going to... I'm just going to click around, and we'll see if it repeats, and if it doesn't, I'll open the other one. So instead of focusing on the top graph, which is sampled, we get this new area called DPCs and ISRs. In XPerfView, the old one, they actually split it out into two categories. WPA, even though there was two different keywords, they're in the same expander boxed area. And they actually bring it in as two graphs, and you end up with a DPC graph. DPCs and interrupts, which is also ISRs, interrupt service routines, always look at them from a CPU point of view because they are a CPU-centric issue. They're not anything else. Because we're being CPU-centric for DPC and ISR analysis, we also want to be CPU-centric for the actual process analysis. So we'll put this at the top.
And the thing to... the main key of to keep in mind about ISRs and DPCs is it's okay to have them, but not for very long at a time, right? Because when an ISR or a DPC is running on a CPU, nothing else can run on that CPU. Nothing else can preempt that or be scheduled. And so that's where you get these kind of weird hangs and bad performance.
And I think the general guidance is, a very broad guidance is, nothing over 1% for interrupts and nothing over 4, 5, 6, 7% for, or less than 10% for DPCs.
The DPCs, you actually want to keep the duration under a certain number of milliseconds. One of the things that we see often with, say, for example, audio glitches, where you're playing some audio file and then you sort of hear these pops and crackles in it when you go do something on the graphics card. And what's happening there often is the graphics driver is taking too long at DPC, which prevents the audio thread from feeding data out to the audio card. And so that's a factor of how long, not necessarily how many DPCs you have, but how long we're spending in an individual DPC.
Mm. And that last keyword we put on, the driver's keyword, there's another graph for that. And so, where am I going with my... the graph we want is DPC timeline, this one. All right, we'll just shove it here in the middle. Actually, what I'm going to do is show another feature. You can make another tab, and then let's move this guy onto that tab, and then I'll get rid of him from this tab. So you can kind of like do two phases of analysis. So what you're seeing here is like DirectX kernel. The red bars on the top and bottom represent we have data for that set, right? And the bar in the middle is the duration of a call, right? And so what we can do is if we look at the data for this guy, is go across the entire box. Actually, I'll start simple loading in the background. See how one column is red and one column is blue? Mm-hmm. That's because it uses coloring to represent the statistical analysis. Red is max, blue is average. And the way you can see that is if you right-click on the graph, and on this one, it's really, you open the view editor. It's the same data three times. That the red ones, that color is max, that color is average, that color is sum. And so this one's going to be obviously the maximum duration of any call, the average call. So you go, well, the average is say 4 milliseconds, but there's this outlying 12 millisecond one. That's a bit weird. Just work out why. And then sum just gives you an idea of how hot it's hitting the box. So you can have the same column multiple times with different statistical analysis. You cannot do that in Expert View, right? That's one of the major benefits of it, WPA.
And that's one of the things that comes into play, what I was talking about, where you can go look at, okay, what was the single longest DPC I had?
Yeah, and so what if I do, if I sort by this first column, which was the max column, I can see that the longest DPC in the entire system was 1.5 milliseconds, right? Which is in system metrics, that's good.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
In Expert View, this doesn't exist anymore in WPA, but you could right-click and go set delay threshold, and you could say, show me anything that was longer than, sorry, this is a function call, sorry, not DPC. Show me anything that's longer than 100 milliseconds. And so it would filter the whole list for you, and it would just give you the remainder. they don't really have that in here, because there's no real need. You can just sort it and achieve the same goal. So if you just see long calls, so like it doesn't matter where it came from. And antivirus is a good example. I don't care if Explorer hit it or IE hit it or whoever hit it. The point is it goes down the kernel and calls the AV code. There is going to be a driver for it. If you see that driver taking a long time, that is your issue, right? So it's more looking at the system from a function code point of view rather than who invoked it, like a process or DPC or ISR point of view. All right, so let's have a look at the... that kind of is a great way of working out the slowness in the kernel from a driver point of view. Let's look at it from a CPU point of view. Now, this hasn't actually given me the data I want, but I'll show you the analysis first, then I'll jump to another better example. You'll notice that all my interrupts are only on CPU 0, and that's a very common thing. ISRs are affinitized to core 0. It's just the way that physical hardware is architected. If you have the network scaling pack, which was introduced a while ago in 2003, or something like that, and now it's part of Windows, you can ask a network card to fire its interrupts across all the CPUs. It's more of a server thing, so if that's the case, you would expect to see more CPUs here. But on a client system, that it's very common to only see CPU 0. So this is kind of filtered to 0 by its data. If we make everybody else filtered to 0 as well, because it's only the contention on 0 that matters, not the contention on the other ones, we can see that from a overall CPU point of view, which is the top graph, this is the usage. This does include the DPCs and ISRs, and so you might have it all being very busy, and then you can't explain why there's a big dip because no processes have run. Well, it's because the CPU's moved to the DPC or the ISR graphs. This one's relatively flat. In fact, it's very flat, and it's awesome. And then interrupts are also equally as flat. What we can do is expand these. If you have more than one graph on it, you'll see how we've now got them at the bottom instead, and so you can like jump between them. The great thing about it is if we open this guy up, add the code who is calling these things, let's say that I do Win32K, there is 50 samples in this thing, and it's highlighted here and here as a big blue bar. So there's probably a swathe of them here on this spike and a little tiny swathe of them over here. If I jump to another graph, the blue bars will stay from where you last made a selection. Mm. So you can kind of go, well, there was a swathe of them here, but there's a whole lot of interrupts just before it as well. So you can make the correlation, interrupts fired, they turn into DPCs, DPCs did work. And then if you looked at the top graph, you could see a starvation of applications on that guy. All right, so let me show you a better example, which, because this is all really flat. I did one last night, and I actually got a really good one to show the point. So same thing again. What we're going to do is grab the CPU bias, the utilization by CPU, and then in the duration by CPU and ISRs by CPU. And then we're going to maximize it, which puts them down the bottom. We're going to filter it down to CPU 0 on each graph. That's what it filtered by essence. And so what you can see is there's this big spike here in the middle. All right, so let's find out what that spike is exactly and whether it is or isn't an issue. So here's the spike. So let's narrow into it in the first place. So all the graphs are now looking at the same thing. And you can see there's a big area here, so we'll go a little bit further in. All right, and here's our swathe of stuff. We're looking at the ISR graph at the moment. So let's bring across the function. And so there is 273 in the ACPI interrupt. ACPI is your BIOS, always. Actually, in this sense, it's actually your firmware. Mm-hmm. So I always forget what this stands for, but ACPI is like the Advanced Configuration and Power Interface or something.
Yep.
And, or Advanced Computer, whatever. The point is, you actually can ask the motherboard to do things, right? And so this thing is interacting with your motherboard for motherboard reasons rather than talking to your disk controller or your GPU or something like that. So that's why it piqued my interest. So I went, why do I have an ACPI storm on my box, right? And you can see that if I split it out a bit more and put, so it was definitely, most of it's all there. There's only one function. If there was multiple functions, there's not multiple functions firing on any of these. But if there's, you know, two different interrupts firing from that driver, then you get two lines.
How do you know what it should be, what ACPI should be? I mean, is it just a matter of doing this 1,000 times?
There should be no, I know what ACPI is from experience, mm-hmm. but it's kind of relevant. The point is there was a spike.
Yeah.
And there just should not be a spike ever. Every PC that I've got sits on 1% or lower and never spikes on ISRs, DPCs, and apps obviously go high, but nothing else does.
Yeah.
Because I look at them and go, that's not good, and I work out very quickly, you can do this in like a couple of minutes, mm-hmm. That driver's not good, I want to go see if there's an update for it.
Yeah.
So the point is that a particular driver like ACPI or something should not be sort of using up all of your computing power, right? It should be kind of in the background just...
And it wasn't small either. It got to 12%. This is an 8 core, so 8 into 12... 8 into 100 is 12. It pegged the CPU, one CPU, nonstop.
Yeah.
That's just not right.
Yeah.
An interrupt should never go above 1% of the entire box. Mm-hmm. Right, so maybe 8% in this case. And it was at 100%. And it was bad, hence why my interest. So it called an interrupt surface routine, and that's really all you can get from the ISR graph, right? But what we can do is, because it's highlighted, you get the period here, or what it is. So let's move to DPCs, which is the next thing. So ISRs always turn into DPCs. And lo and behold, if you futz around with the column ordering, ACPI is on the list as well, right? Equally as hot, really running a lot of
50%
of my box.
Wow.
An 8-core box. Mm-hmm. Also, 50% of that what single core in this
of
case.
Of that core.
Because I filtered it down. But still, it's...
That's a lot of computing.
Yeah. And there's... they're also running... They're not running overly long, kind of, but there is a lot of them. And so if I expand this out, there's two types. There's the ACPI Interrupt Service Routine, DPC. This is a very common that you'll see the name of the interrupt appended with DPC when it turns into a DPC. So it's pretty obvious that the interrupts turn into this guy. I don't know what made the interrupt dispatch events, but there was a lot of them as well. The fact that it's got the word event in it kind of suggests to me that some type of timer was triggering it or something like that. The point is it was running hot. We still don't have any stacks or anything else to really understand what it does, but we do know that ACPI was running hot. So then it's a matter of getting to the last one, which is stack sampling. Once again, these are all running hot. And so what we have here is really no knowledge of what process got usurped. So what you'll get in the stack trace is the program that was running, and then the DPC will interrupt it and be there on top of the stack and then be doing its work. If we expand this out, lo and behold, I can guarantee you none of my exes are running ACPI.sys code themselves. What it is the DPC running on top of it, and you're seeing that. So I can see that in the entire trace, and there's a blue line here, 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 and here, the statistical sampling 5 times caught ACPI. Well, we know it ran 300 times in the other graphs, and it's a perfect example of how the samples miss the actuality. But 5 times we caught it, all right? And then we expand this out, and what we want to do is do the stack. And so what we can do is if we can completely ignore the module, actually, and cheat. On the stack, even though it's not expanded or anything, if I click on that column and do find and type ACPI, see how it puts the stack thing there for you? And so, and it will find collapse roads. And so it will find the first line, the first stack that's doing this. So even though we didn't get a stack via the DPCs or the ISRs, we actually still have a stack of this in action by our statistical luck. Which is kind of cool.
It ran often enough that eventually one of those samples just happened to catch it.
Yeah. And so now we know what happened. So in the kernel, this was a kernel thread, so it's not associated with a program. It actually is associated with a system process, which doesn't actually exist, mm-hmm. process zero. It called into a driver. Sys is always drivers. DLLs is always user mode. Battery C, so obviously something to do with the battery. CM battery, whatever that means, something battery. And then goes into ACPI.sys. Now, I'm not going to drill into this, but I can tell you what it's doing is it's trying to work out what the battery state is. The reason why I got it was, and actually it happened in the trace, I popped up, it says, you have 10% of battery left on your PC. Mm. And so actually it working out the battery state and doing all that management took this large amount of compute to work out where the battery is, hence why it was ACPI-based, because it had to go talk to the battery.
Yeah.
Right? And so it was a good way of going, I can explain this spike on my box. It was an ACPI one, and I happened to visualize this dialogue that actually popped up.
Yeah.
Just by pure chance,
when
I took the trace, saying, you have 10% battery left, please plug your power in.
Nice.
And so you can do that with anything. You can do that from drivers, you can do it from interrupts being noisy, you can do it from obviously programs doing anything. Any way you can slice and dice it you can think of, that's what you can achieve. It's about going in with a focus, going, okay, this is hot, let's work out who it is, let's work out the context, and then in some cases with this type of analysis, with the interrupts and DPCs, what led up to it. And then if you actually put all the time columns on it and put them in order, you actually can just choose one, it will put a blue bar on all the graphs, and then you can go to the next one and it will highlight, I'll show you one example. So we'll just choose sort it by enter time. So right here, there is a blue bar, right? And then, so that interrupt fired, and then if I put, where is it? There will be a blue bar over the top of this one that matches it. No, I haven't found it, but it will show you another blue bar. And so you can see that this one happened just next to this one that turned into this one. And you actually can trace the sequence of events.
And the thing to remember about ISRs is that they are not typically caused by something in software. Well, they could be, but a lot of times they're triggered by some hardware event.
Well, it's kind of it's software can ask the hardware to do something, and
yes.
Then the interrupt comes back as the response.
Exactly.
And a disk read is a really good example of that.
Right.
You say to the disk controller, go give me that file.
And interrupt me when you got it.
Yeah. And that's why it's called an asynchronous I.O. And so if you're doing programming, you get to do an asynchronous overlap result parameter into the I.O. routines. And that's exactly what you're doing. You're subscribing to the interrupt, firing the DPC, and the DPC waking you up. And that whole waiting is exactly what we're going to cover next week, is how X to Y to Z waited for each other. You weren't 100% pegged saying start that. You were doing nothing waiting. And that's what, as I said, next week is all about.
Very nice. All right. Well, that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can write us at defragtools@microsoft.com, and we'll see you next week.
Have a good week.